Well, we've had our maximum fun for the day. Let's shoot for some minimum fun here. Good afternoon. They set the bar very high on the last show. We'll be somewhere in the middle. Good afternoon. It's 2-ish. Yeah, Thursday, August 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Hey, it's Vox Pop, and we're going to talk about home improvement today. What is more maximally fun than getting a hammer and banging it into a nail? I don't know. Darren Tracy's here. He's a licensed professional engineer, construction specialist. He's ready to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop at wamc.org. But you call us, 800-348-2551. Home improvement with Darren Tracy coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. We welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You got a home improvement question? Call 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop at wamc.org. That's voxpop at wamc.org. The number again, though, is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, I think the last time you were on, we got bumped by some news event. How's the summer been?
Summer's been great, Ray.
That's great. It's great to have you back on the program again. Anything you want to talk about before we start hitting the email bag and the phones?
Not specifically.
All right. Well, then let's get to it then. This is from Jody. Wondering if you could advise on the best way to mitigate moisture in the basement. We got a 30s farmhouse. Pretty good dehumidifier, lots of stored stuff in the basement. It has some cement. It has a cement floor with some cracks. Drain ditches around the interior perimeter. We use a sump pump when it rains because water accumulates in one corner. Is there any hope for this basement ever remaining dry enough to store things safely? It's just always too musty down here. Would appreciate your thoughts.
Well, that's a common problem, Jody, in older homes. And the concrete slab, or if it's a dirt floor in the basement, acts like a sponge just wicking up moisture from the earth. A dehumidifier helps quite a bit. Also, in the summertime, you should keep your windows in the basement closed, not open. Close. That could be counterintuitive to some people. I know we've had these calls before, but what happens, Jody, in the summertime is that warm air comes in through the basement windows and cools because of the ground temperature. The basement's cooler. And moisture condenses out and makes it a higher relative humidity. So you want your windows closed. You want to insulate the rim joist or band joist around the perimeter of your foundation wall. That's the connection between the wood part of your home and the masonry foundation wall. That tends to be leaky. So you want to seal that up as good as possible. You mentioned you have a sump pump. You want to put a lid over top of that just to help isolate any water that's in there. And the same if you have a French drain around the perimeter, somehow cover that drain up with an impermeable membrane. It could be plastic. It could be even some boards. It could be I'm just trying to think off the top of my head what would be good to cover that up with. Anything so that water in that drain doesn't tend to evaporate into the atmosphere of the basement.
Ah.
And lastly, if you can coat the basement floor with some material that minimizes water vapor transmission, and I've done research on products. I haven't really found a great product that, minimizes the transport of vapor up through a concrete slab, but that would help. I think there is hope.
There is hope, but it's not quite there yet.
There's hope. Well, if you undertake the items that I mentioned, you know, it will help minimize the relative humidity in the basement and make it less musty. And that musty air can migrate up to the living spaces, too. So
yeah.
The drier you can make it, the better.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And I believe our buddy Merle in Argyle has a similar question to Jody. Merle, you there?
I'm here.
You're on the air.
I've been listening.
Okay.
We have a French drain. We put in a new gutter on the kitchen area. The problem is that the water is like running uphill somehow. And we have water in the basement most of the year. This has been dry, but right now I got water running in the basement with a sump pump. The French drain did not work. The only thing I'm calling about is that I disagree with your relative humidity closing up the basement. It's mustier and smellier. Our basement is half concrete and half shale, and it's coming in from the southwest corner, and it runs most, like I said, just most of the year.
Okay.
Not a lot, but there's enough that it runs a sump pump.
Yeah.
And I think, anyway, from listening to you about closing it up, and I open it up.
Okay.
And it seems to be better.
All right.
I open up the screens in the basement. I mean, the storms. I've had storms and screens.
Yeah.
So this time of year, I'm leaving the windows open.
Okay.
I'm disagreeing with you.
Oh, I like this. A good argument on the show. All right.
The relative humidity, you may be right coming up through the house, but the fact that it doesn't stink.
Okay. Well, let's see if our guest, Darren Tracy, is still with us. Darren, are you there?
I'm still here.
What do you think?
So, I like to suggest that I respect Merle's opinion, and he may be correct in that the basement smells less musty with the windows open. But what I'm suggesting is if you take additional measures to minimize moisture coming into your basement and then seal it up, you're going to ultimately have a lower relative humidity. And I'm almost certain about this. I've been on many projects where crawl spaces and basements have been ventilated, and that warm moisture comes in and then cools and condenses in the basement, contributes, it brings in moisture. So I'm thinking if Merle was able to isolate that water that's running through his basement and put a vapor barrier on top of that, he would be in really good shape. our daughter and her husband just recently bought a home, and it's built on ledge rock, and they have like a little mini stream going through their basement, and they have this moisture problem. So what they are doing, and Merle could do this, and it does take some work, they're putting a layer of pea stone, small stones, on top of the water that's running through the basement. And then on top of that, they're putting a vapor barrier. Often on this program, I'll suggest a 6-mil poly vapor barrier. That's an inexpensive plastic sheet, and that works okay. But you can go heavier duty too, and it is more durable. So you put that over top of basement, peystone in your basement, and you isolate that moisture that's running through, and you can really condition that space, and you'd eliminate a lot of the humidity in that basement big time.
That's interesting. And Merle, thank you.
I'm going to put something on my website, Ray, about this, because we get these calls so often with some details. But the takeaway is on this, if you isolate the moisture in the basement, keep it coming from the walls and the slab with a vapor barrier, you close your windows, you put a dehumidifier in there, you can minimize the mustiness and the humidity in your basement. And you know, I've seen that work, and it works quite well.
How thick will the pea gravel be in your daughter's house in the basement?
It will vary, because they're built on, this is in New Hampshire, and it's on granite. So part of their basement is an exposed rock. And then there's like a valley between a lower section and this exposed rock. So they're going to have to, and the differential in elevation is maybe 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah.
So they're going to fill up the, what would be the valley or the trough in the basement with peystone where the water runs through continuously, and maybe put a foot of peystone in there and then a vapor barrier on top. They're going to install a sump over in the corner. They're going to install a dehumidifier. They're going to seal up the basement walls with a semi-breathable barrier, so moisture will tend not to come in through the exterior when it rains. Concrete's like a sponge. But you also want it to dry some, too.
Okay.
So,
hey, Darren, let's take a quick break here. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a home maintenance repair and or improvement question for Mr. Darren Tracy. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number to call if you have a question for Darren Tracy today, or perhaps you could email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And Darren, we got a few emails here we'll blast through before we get back to the phones. This one's from Joan. Joan writes, our Ubatuba granite countertops are almost 20 years old. The areas near the sink and range top have become worn, much less smooth and shiny, in dramatic contrast to the more pristine countertops. We're kind of liking this worn, more rustic look. Is there a technique for giving all the counters this more rustic appearance without submitting them to 20 years of abuse? And that's from Joan.
I would suggest taking a mild abrasive and rubbing it on a small sample area over in the corner.
Yeah.
The very fine grit, and see if you can achieve the patina that you're looking for. And if so, go for it for the rest of the counter.
Fair enough. This one, go ahead. You want to continue on that one?
That was it. Before we go back to another caller, I'd like to reference that the damp basement. I do have a couple of videos on my website. One is called Improving an Old Basement on the Cheap. Actually refers to a YouTube link.
Yep.
So that would be helpful for somebody to minimize the dampness in a basement on the cheap. And I also have a video about pouring a concrete floor in an old home and installing a vapor barrier. Again, that's on my website, and there's a link there to my YouTube page with some decent videos.
All right. I think we have a link to your site from our web page, but in case somebody doesn't get there, what is your URL?
It's westbranchengineering.com.
Okay. Darren Tracy is our guest today. Christine, our pal Christine in Waterville wrote in, how would I know when I should replace my roof? House is 23 years old. I believe it's tile. No leaks yet. Three tiles have blown off recently, though. And that's from Christine in Waterville.
Okay. Christine mentions tile. That's an uncommon roof product. And this geographic area, the Northeast, usually tiles are used in the southern climates. And they have a really long lifespan, maybe 50 years. So I'm a little bit surprised that that would need replacement after 23 years. Most shingled, most roofs in the Northeast are asphalt shingles, and they have a lifespan of probably 20 to 30 years. The manufacturer's warranties are sometimes lifetime warranties, but that's a little bit misleading because that warranty is prorated.
Right.
So in practice, you end up between 20 and 30 years. And then you want to look, of course, for any leaks in the home. That's a telltale sign. That's when you need to start replacing your shingles. I like to stretch out replacement as long as possible to save monetary and natural resources. But if you see the edges of the shingles starting to curl up a little bit, probably within 5 years of that first notation of that happening is when you would be wanting to replace your shingles.
Okie doke. This one is from Jeremy in Monson, Mass. The hot water in my one-story ranch has low water pressure if more than one hot water faucet is on, to the point where hardly any water comes out of the second open faucet. We have city water. The hot water is heated with an oil-fired boiler about 12 years old. I have not found any valves that are turned down. I thought maybe the mixer valve on the boiler may be faulty because when I run the shower, it starts off warm if the handle is turned too hot, but it increasingly has to be backed off because it gets hotter if the boiler kicks on. Could there also be an issue with the shower valve as well? And that's from Jeremy in Monson, Mass.
There could be, but because the volume decreases when the second is turned off, it's telling me there's a restriction in the line someplace. There may be some mineral buildup. Could be a screen in the faucet itself. Sometimes those need cleaning out, but that would not be limited to just the hot. That would be the cold and the hot. Mm. So it sounds like a restriction in the pipe somewhere.
You think it's maybe a pipe that is ready for replacement somewhere?
Could be associated with a hot water maker, hot water heater.
Okay.
The hot water side tends to build up with mineral deposits more than cold.
All right. Let's see here. One more email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number if you have a question for Darren Tracy today. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. I'm vamping a moment here because my device is... Okay, here we go. I wasn't pulling up the email, but now we got this one from Lenny. I'm thinking of replacing my 16-year-old gas furnace and central air conditioning system next year. Currently have duct work installed. I'm keen on going with a heat pump system to take advantage of credits and rebates. How prevalent are heat pumps in this area? What are the pros and cons? You know, you and I have talked about this many times. There are pros and there are some cons. What do you know now, Darren Tracy?
Well, I know that the heat pumps are becoming more and more efficient at lower temperatures. And that's the key, Ray, in these northern climates. Years ago, they were only efficient down to, say, 20 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. But they've improved their efficiency such that they can heat fairly well down to zero and even some sub-zero temperatures. I know I've had contact with a previous caller on the show, and they have a heat pump system in their home, and that's all they use. There's no electric baseboard backup. There's no furnace backup. And, you know, I was impressed, and I talked to them about that a little bit. And they have a very well-insulated home. So they heat their whole home with a heat pump, and that's it. But they have a really well-insulated home. So it's not a bad move. The industry's tending to go more towards electricity than fossil fuels. Not a bad move. I think you really should have some backup of some sort, hot water or electric baseboard, or maybe a wood stove, or keep your gas furnace in place for those really cold nights, and then use your heat pump system primarily. And for listeners, a heat pump is a refrigeration cycle that basically borrows a warmer temperature from outside and through the magic of thermodynamics in the refrigeration cycle, transfers that inside.
The question I have, though, I know we've talked about the efficiency of some of these systems that are getting better and going down in temperature from 20 to zero, let's say. But what if you are sub-zero and your system is rated to be efficient at 0 degrees? Will you harm that system by continuing to run it in colder weather, or will it just not be as warm as you'd like?
No, you won't harm the system. You will just lose your efficiency.
Okay. Darren Tracy is our guest. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. David in New Paltz has been waiting a while. And David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Darren. I have a question. I have an antique building that's 120 years old. It used to be a silent movie theater, and the interior of the building was converted into a home. And during the COVID time, for 3 years or so, it's been closed off. And the interior is yellow pine wainscoting, and it has in some places mold, some places it just needs cleaning, and it's I had some painters look at it. Some people say it should be washed on with a solution of bleach. Another person says keep away from the bleach, it'll hurt the wood, and go with the wood soap. And what is your opinion on that?
Darren?
I would probably suggest using a mildicide, which might consist of some chlorine in it, but it may have other products in it as well. And I would install a dehumidifier, David, in that building to help bring down the humidity, because mold and mildew needs moisture to survive, and it needs a product, a food source, and it needs the right temperature. But if you eliminate one or more of those, then you can minimize mold and mildew. So I'd install a dehumidifier, and I would use a mildicide that you can buy commercially over the counter, and then you'd be safe. You could use chlorine bleach, diluted wood water, but that could be harmful to some materials, and also if you're not careful, you can get the proportion wrong and could be physically damaging to your eyes and skin. So that's what I suggest.
You'll decide. Any product that you recommend?
No, not specifically. Any hardware store, local hardware store, big box store product that says Mildicide for cleaning mold and mildew.
Okay, I thank you very much.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Welcome. It's home improvement, maintenance, repair with Darren Tracy. 800-348-2551 is the number. Kind of interesting, Darren, that we've had a lot of calls about wet basements and damp conditions. We haven't had very much rain this summer, so it must be on the minds of some folks anyway.
Well, even if you don't have rain, Ray, if you have an older basement and it's not waterproofed, it's going to be damp down there.
Yeah. All right, let's go.
Even in dry conditions.
Let's go to Troy. Andrea, you're on.
Hi. I have a natural gas-fired boiler, and I'd like to get away from using fossil fuels. I really like my radiators, and I would like to see if I could stick with the radiators. I know that induction cooktops boil water really quickly. Are there any induction boilers on the market? Have any manufacturers come up with them?
Yeah, I'm not sure about induction boilers, but there are electric boilers on the market. And you could actually use a heat pump system in combination with existing hydronic heating.
How efficient are the electric boilers that are in the market now?
Electric boilers are very efficient. Electricity is very efficient. It's basically 100% efficient at your home because you're not wasting anything. For instance, with natural gas, which you currently have, you burn that gas and some of the BTUs go up the flue and you lose your efficiency. But with electric, it's all put right there into the area that you're heating. So they are highly efficient. But the downside is electricity tends to be more expensive than gas and oil. That's changing. That's changing as those prices of oil are going up. And then there's also the ability to make your own electricity with solar panels, and that's where that's where a lot of hope and optimism lies, because then you're not relying upon the utility company to burn natural gas and to generate electricity and send it to your house. And you're using electricity to heat your home, but somebody else is burning natural gas to make that electricity. But if you could have solar panels on your home and make your own electricity, then you're not burning any fossil fuel.
I actually do have solar panels, but I'm not allowed to have more solar panels than I've been using electricity for, so I'd have to get more solar panels, which is fine with me. But you're saying that there are electric boilers that are on the market and available now?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that correct?
They've been on the market.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's correct. They've been on the market a long time.
Drea, thanks a lot for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest today on Vox Pop. Let's grab one more before our next break. The number is 800-348-2551. Doug is calling, and I can see by what he carries, he comes from Barrytown. You're on, Doug.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a simple question. For the last few months, when I wake up in the morning, go to my kitchen sink, turn on the cold water tap, the water runs warm, and for a few minutes, as if there's some sort of bleed through from the hot water side. And I can't figure out what might be causing that.
My guess is that the cold water line is running next to a warm water line, and there's a transfer of energy that heats up that cold water into warm water. And that's why you experience it only for a short while. Now, if this is occurring only in the summertime, then that heating source might be caused by something else, like maybe a pipe near some sunlight or near something that does get warm. An example of that is if you run water in a garden hose in the summertime, it comes out warm. Then you flush the water out and it cools off. But I think you're next to something warm. You've got to be a portion of your cold water pipe is adjacent to something that is warm. It might be another hot water pipe, or it might be some other mass that's heating up in the summertime.
Have you ever heard of the possibility of a bad valve in a washing machine in the house somehow affecting this? This was a theory that one friend of mine had. I don't know the engineering.
It sounds like it's adjacent to some hot water source. Part of your pipe is adjacent to some hot water source or some short distance. Mm-hmm. So it comes on, it's flushed out, and the colder water comes through. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And Ray, did you Did you say this caller's from Barrytown?
Yeah.
Steely Dan's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so I picked
okay.
that up and it'd be
yes. You know what, Darren Tracy? You got
Steely
the
Dan's
reference,
song.
Man. Good job. Yes.
Yeah, I did.
That was an arcane
which
reference.
Which is a good tune, by the way.
Very nice. Well, you know, we'll spend some Steely Dan one of these days on the show here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. And we'll take a break. We'll hit the email bag. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. We're joined today by Darren Tracy, who is answering your questions about home maintenance, improvement, and repair. The number is 800-348-2551, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. Let's dispense with a few emails here, though. Darren, this one is from, oh, I read that one. Okay, we'll move on to the next one here. Hi, Darren. This is from Chris. We installed solar hot water on our roof 15 years ago. For example, our conventional hot water heater has been used about 10 days since mid-May. Don't you wish everyone was using this conservation and money-saving method? Its pump runs off a solar panel. It has no bearings, never required repairs. That's from Chris.
Yeah, I do. It's a great idea, and in contrast to photovoltaic panels that we were just discussing, this is a panel that heats up hot water. It doesn't create electricity. It heats up hot water. It's piped into your domestic hot water system and typically acts as a preheater to your existing hot water tank. So you still have to have a hot water tank and heater for cloudy days and for the winter. But these solar hot water heaters do a great job for, say, three seasons of preheating hot water that goes into your primary hot water heater. So sometimes your primary hot water heater does not have to work at all. Got on a day like today, it may be preheating your water to 110 or 115 degrees, so you don't have to burn any type of electricity or fossil fuel to heat up hot water. Yeah, they're a great idea. I've got one in my home. I had a homemade one made with just coils of black polyethylene pipe many, many years ago, and then I improved that a little bit by purchasing a store-bought panel and Rube Goldberg tying it into my system. But yeah, it's a great idea.
Well,
Ray, could I just go back to an earlier caller about the basement, because that's bothering me a little bit.
Yeah, why not?
He was disagreeing. I think his name is Merle.
Merle, he disagrees sometimes, yes.
If he's thinking that his basement is less stuffy by introducing air, I wouldn't advise him not to do that, because he's probably a good judge of that. But what I'm suggesting on that is, if he takes some measures to mitigate the other sources of moisture coming into the basement, and then he closes his windows, he would be better off.
Ah.
But I just wanted to make that,
yeah,
that point.
All right, here's one about roof insulation in a 1780 house, and this is from John. Renovating an old house, never been touched for hundreds of years. Roof needs to be insulated, but we want to keep the old rafters visible in the attic and the upper rooms, so we don't want to insulate inside. Also, the roof badly needs to be redone. If we add 2 to 4 inches of foam outside the roof deck, are there any special details we need to know? With this construction, are roof vents actually necessary? I figured they're not, and heat loss is greater with vented roofs, but some installers say the roofing materials will not be warranted without ridge vents. Planning on asphalt shingles, but if we win the lottery, we might do cedar. Ideas on best insulation details? Also, does code require a minimum R value to be added, or will we be allowed to add as much as we want? And that's a long email from John.
Okay, I'm not sure I'm totally following what he's suggesting, but what I think John is suggesting is to add insulation on top of the roof sheathing.
so that there's no insulation whatsoever inside the attic.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. And that insulation, he called it foam insulation. That insulation would typically be in sheets, typically comes 2, 3, 4 inches thick.
Yeah.
And that is quite a good way to insulate an attic or insulate a building. There are a couple of details that you really have to take care with. For instance, the connection between the exterior wall and the roof.
Yeah.
So that there's not a thermal break there. But it's a really good method of insulating. And I've seen studies, I don't think it raises the temperature of the shingles very much at all, if at all. So I don't think that there's a warranty issue there. Or if there is, it may be just like a kind of a belts and suspenders claim on the part of the shingle manufacturer.
Okay.
And then ventilation, you wouldn't want any ventilation on that system at all, because anything below the roof sheathing would be called conditioned space. That would be warm up
right
there in the attic. So you would not want that ventilated. I'm not sure if that answers all John's questions, but that's all I can recall.
Well, okay. And we'll call that one done for now. This last email for this time is from Michael. In a dry basement of 22-year-old house, the ceiling has exposed insulation. What's the best way to finish that ceiling? And that's from Michael.
You could finish that ceiling with drywall, otherwise known as sheetrock or gypsum.
Yeah.
That's a good way to finish that ceiling.
All right. Let's.
I really like the idea of insulating the basement walls better than the floor between the basement and the walls.
Why is that?
The walls is, well, because you're going to tend to have a damp basement.
Yeah.
For one, it's going to be cool and have a damp basement. And it also helps keep your utilities from freezing if you insulate the walls versus the floor separating the house from the basement.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You could have, say, a water line in the basement run close to an exterior wall. And since that space is not heated at all, that water line could have a tendency to freeze.
Right.
So those are a couple of reasons.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. The number is 800-348-2551. Gary's in Niskayuna. Gary, you're up.
Thank you. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hello.
My question concerns constructing a cedar closet in my finished basement. I've been talked off the ledge about using cedar chip or cedar flake board because of potential carcinogenic gases. But I wanted to know, if I am going to put in any cedar, aside from very expensive cedar planking, what should I use? What's the most effective way to accomplish making a cedar closet to, you know, keep clothing fresh and moth-free, et cetera? Also, what kind of drywall in terms of depth and substance should I be using?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that you would need drywall at all, Gary, if you're making a closet out of cedar.
Okay.
Cedar is relatively expensive board material. Maybe the chip panel would be less expensive than board products. It's resistant to rot, so that's a really good material to use in a basement that tends to be a higher relative humidity. I'll tell you what, something that just popped into my head would be the use of cedar shakes, shims or shingles.
Yeah.
Those are relatively inexpensive compared to lumber. And you could line the walls with that material. And it's actually going to be a lot of surface area, probably smell real good and probably be less costly than cedar boards. You could use white cedar,
I was told that the cedar boards are comprised largely of formaldehyde, as well as the wood product, and that that's carcinogenic. or potentially carcinogenic.
You mean the cedar chip panels?
Right.
The panels, not the boards?
Right.
That may be.
Right.
That may be. Yeah, that could be a part of the adhesive that helps hold that together. So that would be another reason, if you're concerned about that, to go with, say, the cedar shakes. And for
now, if I went with cedar shakes, do I have to do all? I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
For the listeners that are not aware, cedar shake is it's like a wooden shingle,
yeah,
but can be used inside as well.
All right, Gary, follow up, and then we'll move on here. Go ahead.
Okay, my last question would be, if I am going to use something like cedar shakes, do I have to do all surfaces, each wall and the ceiling, or can I get away with just doing one side and closing it in somehow? You said I don't need to use drywall, but...
Yeah, that's a good idea, Gary. Get away with maybe just doing one wall and then the rest of the surfaces, and you could use a moisture-resistant sheetrock. It would cut down...
And that's usually 5/8?
...the expense. Mm-hmm. The ceiling, you'd want to use 5/8. The walls you could use 1/2 inch.
Okay.
In the ceiling, it's a closet small. If the spacing between the ceiling joists is 16 inches, you could get away with 1/2 inch, then you're using all the same material. But you do want to use a green board, a moisture-resistant sheetrock.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Gary. Let's go to Round Lake. And Goni, you're on. Hello?
Hello.
You're on.
Hey, my name is Goni, and I have an interesting problem. When they built my porch on the front of the house, they built it on top of a septic system, and now one of the footers is sinking, and it's now 6 inches, and it's basically pulling away from the house.
Okay, the porch is sinking.
Do you have any recommendations?
Darren.
Yeah, I'm not totally understanding the layout, the question. Well, I understand the question, but I'm not understanding exactly the layout that the gentleman has. I guess the porch is built over top of a septic system, and there's a footing that's adjacent to the septic system.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe if you want to contact me, if you want to contact me after the program, you can email me, Darren@WestBranchInc.com, and I can talk to you about that in more detail, and maybe you could send me a photo and I could help
you. Oh, yeah,
a
photo would definitely
better
help.
By looking at a photo and something like that.
But in general, and thank you for the call. In general, Darren, the question of sinking is a real problem in some areas around here, and I guess over a septic, I assume a leach field or something, it could be real bad, yeah?
Well, the footing should be below the frost level. If it's not below the frost level, then it will move over time. And typically it doesn't move up, down, it moves up. It just, the ice in the soil freezes and it pushes it up, pushes that wood member up year after year. Sounds like there might not be a big enough footing underneath the column that's going down.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's settling.
All right, let's go to East Hampton. And Tom, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Darren. I have a sidewalk that was put down about 15 years ago, and the top is crumbling on the sidewalk. And I'm told by a cement person that has looked at it that it was due to improper aggregate that was used in the cement that absorbs moisture and releases moisture over time. Is there anything I can use to cover the sidewalk to give it a smooth surface? As opposed to replacing the entire sidewalk?
There are products out there called repair mortars, and they can buy you some time. Tom, the key to that is proper preparation. You could use a really high pressure washer, and then you could apply this repair mortar. It's relatively expensive, but it's less expensive than replacing the complete sidewalk. You trowel it on and then drag a broom across it for a broom finish, and you might buy yourself another 5 or 10 years. And it may not have been necessarily the aggregate that was used. It could have been the finishing of sidewalk. What happens a lot when people finish concrete sidewalks, they tend to add some water on top to make it easier to finish, and then that makes this surface area of the concrete weaker, and that's why you get that spalling. That's typically the reason sidewalks fail on top, more so than the aggregate.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Quickly here in the waning few moments here, we'll try to get a couple of more calls in. Kim and Shokan. Kim, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have an old farmhouse, and I recently redid the kitchen, and the water line is running on the, you know, on the side of the wall, well insulated. But I did notice that the, you know, pipes did freeze last year a couple of times. And I'm wondering if on the outside is just concrete. Is there anything that I can put on the outside to help insulate that way?
Well, you could possibly put something on the outside of the house, but from what I understand, the pipes are inside, so that's not going to help you so much. And I know we're running out of time here. What I would suggest is to insulate the backside of your piping on the inside of the house and leave the inside face exposed to the warm air inside your house. That way, the warm air inside your house can heat your piping and keep it from freezing, yet the backside is insulated and protected from the cold weather outside.
Gotcha. All right, well, thank you.
Thanks, Kim. All right, we have an email here or two, and then we will wrap it up with Darren Tracy. This one from Joanne. I have a house that's 100-plus years old with a bluestone foundation, which is flaking, as well as some cracks and holes between the stones. Should I just parge over it, as a neighbor suggested, or should I do something different?
I would do something different. I would repoint, take out the mortar in between the stones to a depth of, say, an inch and a half minimum, and repoint. And that way you keep the aesthetic of the stone itself.
All right. Darren Tracy, we're just about out of time here, my friend. If people want to find you on the internet, once again, how do they do that?
They can Google search West Branch Engineering. I have a web page there. I have a construction company, West Branch, Inc. I do have some videos on YouTube. I think they can be helpful for some of the basement questions that were asked. So that's how you can reach me. And I will answer some emails if people have questions, short questions. I do that quite a bit, too.
Okay. And is your email address available on the website?
It is. It's Darren@WestBranchInc.com, and I'll just answer those questions free of charge, unless they become really long and involved.
All right, Matt. Hey, listen, you know, thank you for checking in here during the middle of summer vacation, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, Ray. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. Support comes from Mass Mocha, presenting Terrence Blanchard August 26th at Fresh Grass Festival September 23rd through 25th. MassMocha.org/WAMC. Inquiring Minds Bookstores, New Paltz, Saugerty, selling and buying vinyl records in their vinyl vault, focusing on jazz and classic rock, in-store shopping, curbside pickup online, inquiringbooks.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Well, you see, we got through another one, folks. And thank you for being with us. Thanks for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Susie Chekai. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Gail Sokol is coming back and will bake things that she does whatever she wants. Just tune in at 2 and we'll find out.